So I've mentioned that in these season of green, there's the Revised Common Lectionary has two tracks, and I've been following the second track, which pairs the Old Testament lesson with the gospel lesson. And so the theme from that pairing is one about sort of prophecy or prophets and the rejection or the disappointment that attends the prophets. So this is a typical pattern for God dealing with his people. He anoints and commissions somebody, and his people refuse to listen. That's more or less our readings for next week as well, so I'm not going to talk about that today. I wanted to spend some time on this passage from Corinthians. It's our last reading from 2 Corinthians. Next week we're in the book of Ephesians. And the reading today is a nice summary statement of a lot of the different things we've been hearing as we've read portions of 2 Corinthians over the last couple weeks. In particular, this statement that Paul makes, in weakness is strength made perfect or brought to completion. As Hughes says in his commentary, this is the summit or the high point of the entire book of 2 Corinthians. From this summit, from this height, one can view the whole career and teaching of Paul, the whole life of Paul. This explains and gives content or structure to a bunch of the enigmatic things that we've experienced as Paul has been writing, as we've read Paul's writing to the Corinthian church. In particular, this idea that, you know, Paul is miserable and yet there's glory that comes, or Paul's poor but he's making many rich. All of this sort of paradoxical statement a couple weeks ago. Chapter 4, I believe, Paul says, we have this treasure in earthen vessels so that the power might be demonstrated that it's God's alone or that it's the Lord's. So all of this is expressed and summarized in this great sort of statement. In weakness is strength brought to completion. The word there that we translate strength is perfected is the Greek word telos, and that means the goal, the purpose, the fulfillment of the purpose. And it's, for us, the word perfected or perfect probably rings false as far as this fuller understanding of what the Greek is pointing to. And so this is a challenge for us, I think, to embrace and to accept that Christianity is such that the good things of God come to completion. Their full and natural, their logical fulfillment and growth, their perfection in weakness. Weakness is the context in which we experience and enjoy these things. So that Paul says at the end of this, of what we heard today, when I am weak, then I am powerful. And the word that we translated, power, is the same Greek word. So the one commentary said, why would we say, then I'm strong, when we've been talking about power the whole time? Power is made perfect in weakness. I glory in my weaknesses, Paul, so that I might also receive the power of Jesus. When I am weak, then I am powerful. And though he's probably implying that this is the power of God, his weakness and the power of God, he doesn't actually say that. And I think he wants us to hear. It's too easy for us to go, oh, yeah, okay. So, yeah, Paul's weak, but then Jesus' power comes. And it sort of sits like some sort of artificial covering over Paul's weakness. I don't think that's what Paul's talking about. When I am weak, that's precisely when I am powerful. There's something more organic, more truly related. The weakness and the power are more intrinsically connected to each other. They can't be separated out as Paul's weakness and the power of Christ. This is Paul's weakness being the power. And like I said at the beginning, I'm not really sure what that means. But I think we need to lean in there. It's too easy for us to go away going, oh yeah, whatever. When I'm weak, then I'm strong, and not engage it. There's an invitation here for us, I believe. And of course, this is consistent with Paul's message, which is a message about the cross, because in the cross we see utter weakness. Harder to be more weak than the individual who's dying, impaled to a wooden piece of, you know, structure, who now is also cursed by God and is separate from God, though he has his whole life lived in communion with God. This is Jesus on the cross, the depths of weakness. There's no weaker place. And yet this is the very power of God manifest, the glory of God demonstrated through the resurrection. So there's a very consistent, important theme here, I think, in Paul's ministry. And so we remember part of this whole focus has come about because the Corinthian church had some visiting super apostles who came and said, Paul's not a real apostle. Look at how he lives. Look at, you know, he's weak. He's whatever. And we're great. Like, we're amazing. And we've had all these great experiences. And whatever else their credentials were, they were very full of themselves. And so Paul's writing to sort of rebalance this understanding of the Corinthian church about what a true representative of Jesus would look like. And so this helps us understand some of the confusing language and why Paul is speaking so strongly about these things, but it doesn't change the nature of what Paul is saying. This is very consistent to everything else that Paul has preached and taught, and he truly learned how to embrace his weakness because he saw that as the very opportunity, condition, and place in which power was manifest, and his own ability to live and work as an ambassador of Christ was dependent upon his willingness to receive and accept his weakness. And I think that's a challenge for us. But as I was last night, as I was getting ready for bed and thinking about the sermon and meditating on it, all of a sudden I realized I'd missed something, I jumped over something as I was preparing. Because all of this conversation about, you know, Paul's ability to rejoice and glory in his weakness, and this movement of weakness being an occasion or the place in which power is manifest, seems to depend on this first statement that God gives. So let's back up just a bit. Here's what's happened. Paul says, it's necessary to boast because you've been listening to these braggarts, and I need to boast too because I can claim everything they can claim, I can claim. I know a guy who was lifted up into heaven. It turns out it was Paul. Saw these things that couldn't be uttered, is unwilling, it's not lawful to speak about. Yet, that's not something that I've shared with you before because I don't want you to judge me based on some sort of spiritual encounter. That's not the basis for the presentation of the gospel. God's kingdom does not come on the merits of some sort of ecstatic, visionary experience. Again, unlike we assume, unlike these false apostles that were there in Corinth. So Paul's like targeting them, playing their game on their own field, and meanwhile devaluing that game. Paul says, I'd rather that you judge me based on what you see and what you hear. And he's already, in chapter 11, he's gone through again this list of how many times he's been left dead, shipwrecked, beaten, etc., etc., etc. That's Paul's resume. He says, that's what you see, that's what you know, that's all consistent. He says, I received from God, well, that's implied. I received, it was given to me, a thorn in the flesh, a messenger or an angel of Satan, to beat me so that I would not exalt myself. And I prayed three times. And you've read some of Paul's prayers, right? This wasn't a, God, do you think maybe? I'm sure this was pretty locked down, laborious prayer. A little bit like Jesus in the garden, who also prayed three times, agonizing, as Luke tells us, so that his sweat was like drops of blood. So Paul's praying seriously here three times. And God says, and this was the part I'd missed last, as I was preparing for this, my grace is sufficient for you. My grace is sufficient for you. Just like last week with Jeremiah, who knows that God is merciful, so he knows that his own misery and his own brokenness, his own suffering is something that is a good thing because it means that God's going to act on his behalf. Whatever else Jeremiah knew, he knew that it was not true that God had ceased to be merciful. So if I'm a person who needs mercy, I can wait for God to act because God is merciful. He will act in his mercy. And so that's the position that Jeremiah takes. That was last Sunday. In the same way, this word of grace is this complete opening to the goodness of God's heart and the riches that he has lavished upon humanity, Paul in particular. And he says, Paul, whatever you're facing, I've got it covered. The resources that I'm giving and have made available to you are adequate to meet whatever the need is that you are facing. And then the explanation. For instance, Paul, it's in your weakness that that power is going to be completed and brought to fulfillment. But it's this confidence in the grace of God that allows Paul to do this next step of this weird logic, weakness being the power of God, so that he can say, so then, therefore, I glory. I glory in my weakness. I embrace it. It's a great gift for me. I understand the logic, but I can accept the logic because my heart is held in the mercy and the grace of God. My grace is sufficient for you. That's a beautiful thing. I can't give you that little gift I had last night when I realized I'd missed this in my preparation all week. My grace is sufficient for you. You can just let go of whatever it is that you need to sort of buoy yourself up. Whatever you need to be protecting yourself with, whatever you need. We don't like weakness because weakness is a threat. Not only does it give other people the ability to say, yeah, you know, which they were to Paul. Paul, you're just a whatever. But even in our own hearts and minds, we feel the threat and the pain and the anxiety of our weaknesses. But when I realize that the grace of God is sufficient, I can let go of whatever it is that I'm trying so desperately hard to manage and deny and compensate for my weakness. And that's the gift of this. Now, of course, the kicker is, here's the rub. Do we want to say, my grace is sufficient for you, therefore, God, you will do this and this? If you got a sufficient grace, God, then let's see this and this happen. But Jesus prays, not my will, but thine be done. And that's where Paul ends up. Yes, God, I now will embrace and celebrate this thorn in the flesh, this messenger of Satan, this angel of Satan that beats me up. Now, we don't know what this is, and nobody knows what this is. Some people are very confident in their interpretation. There's three options. The thorn in the flesh is some sort of physical ailment. Going back 1800 years, this was understood as a headache, epilepsy, malaria fever, some sort of eye problem, going back to being blinded by light in his conversion experience. So that's one, it's a physical ailment. Secondly, the thorn in the flesh is people, like these super apostles and other people that are oppressing Paul, antagonistic to Paul and trying to undermine Paul. The third thing is that it's a temptation or a sin. And you might think about Romans 7. I was once alive apart from the law, and then the law said, thou shalt not covet. And sin, taking the occasion, rose up and slew me. And so Paul ends, if you're not familiar with that, with this agonizing cry, O wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from this body of death? And so those are your three options. Various people have held them over the years. More or less, most commentaries today believe it's a physical ailment. The Catholic Church holds still, I think, more or less, that it's a temptation to sin or perhaps actual sin, a besetting sin. Whatever it is, Paul says, I'm going to celebrate this because it's the very condition under which your grace is manifest as sufficient, and it's the very opportunity for the power of God to be manifest. Now, this whole thing, I think, is hard for us. It's hard for us to hear. This points to something that has been made famous by Martin Luther and Lutherans. This whole dichotomy between a theology of glory and a theology of the cross. Paul, that's the whole conflict here with the Corinthian church and these super apostles. They were all preaching a theology of glory. We want the gospel, we want God's love, we want God's mercy, his grace, to be that thing that makes us bigger, better. That's a natural human instinct. Why would you ever want something that's going to make you less if you know what you want? I mean, if you understand the connections, obviously we do things that make us less, but not usually because we want to be more less or to be less, but because we're confused about that. Anyway. But Paul says that's not the way the gospel works in this world. We follow a God who was weak and hidden. That's our Savior. You can't preach the cross without preaching the weakness of God and the humility of God and the backwardness of God and all of these things that Paul said in 1 Corinthians. The foolishness of God being wiser than human wisdom, the weakness of God being stronger than human strength. And Paul places himself solidly inside a theology of the cross. And I think that's a challenge for us. We don't naturally go there. And so we may perhaps be unable to hear. The second thing, so that's one thing that kind of works against us, I think, receiving this. The second thing is that we are desperately invested in protecting those parts of us that we would consider our weaknesses, or hiding them, or, you know, managing them. We don't want that to be the thing that we celebrate, that we receive. That seems wrong-headed as well. And this is where things can get a little complicated. Paul, I think, I have no reason from what we can tell about Paul to doubt that he was a very self-confident individual. I don't know if he had ever experienced, you know, true self-doubt. He's not insecure. He's not the kind of person who's spending his whole life trying to unpackage his childhood traumas. Right? Now, we all know, I think, in 21st century Canadian culture, that there are some of us for whom the opposite is true, that we have been spending our entire life trying to unpack our childhood trauma, that we're very insecure, that you could probably say that most of my life is explained by my insecurities, trying to compensate for them, avoiding those situations that trigger them, etc., etc., etc. Right? Does that sound right? Or am I, like, talking Spanish now or some other foreign language. So this message of the cross looks a little different, I think. It does. In fact, it has been an occasion for abuse in the church, where we take somebody who's truly crippled by their own anxieties and their own doubts and their own self-esteem issues, and we tell them, well, you're just a wretch anyways. Embrace the weakness. That's not appropriate in that context. Dying to themselves still is appropriate. But for some of us, dying to ourselves is being able to embrace our strength. Being able to say, God, when you made me, to use the cliche, when you made me, you didn't make a mistake. Being able to say, I'm loved and I'm lovable. That's the cross for some of us. But regardless, so I want to just let you know, I know this can be complex. But the invitation today is for you and I to get practical about the weakness that we are currently hiding from and ask ourselves, am I willing to bring this out into the light and to say yes to God who has promised, my grace is sufficient for you, and weakness is where my power comes to completion and fulfillment. As crazy as that sounds, because we can't imagine what that would look like if we're truly confronting something in our life that's a weakness. We're being asked to be willing to risk that. What is it today, my own weakness and brokenness, that I can bring in trust and confidence and faith? Saying, yes, I will receive this. As Paul says, I will rejoice and glory in my weakness, so that also the power of Christ might be manifest in me. Let's pray. So God, you know my own temptation for a theology of glory. I want to be, you know, successful, well thought of, etc., etc. And often when I read this passage, that's where I go. A journey to the third heaven. That'd look good on my resume. But thank you for this moment, this time, when you remind me of your grace, complete, undiminished, inexhaustible, as far as east is from west, so great is your love and your mercy, your grace. Give me courage and wisdom to receive in my own life the weakness that you wish to transform as the occasion for power. Not my will, but thine be done. Amen.